Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful April weekend where you happen to be. As you know, we do nothing but live on airplanes, and this week is no exception, crisscrossing the world. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We're at 47 degrees, 48 minutes north, 13 degrees, 2 minutes east. Have any idea where we are? We're in Central Europe, in a place, actually in a country that has seven nations bordering it. Slovenia, Italy, Switzerland, Germany, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Hungary. Where are we? Well, we're in Austria, but where are we specifically? We are in Salzburg, coming to you from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And, you know, considering all the recent events seismically, I want to encourage you to go to our website, which is petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work, all that essential work, all that, I'm sorry to say, nonstop work in Japan. It's amazing what's going on over there, and it's also unbelievably wonderful the opportunities that await you just if you want to get involved. You see, you can always text on your phone to the Red Cross or any one of a number of organizations to have $10 paid from you to donate. Remember, the Red Cross raised over $40 million for relief in Haiti, and that's always a good thing. However, just like Haiti, this is a rebuilding effort that's going to take at least 5 years. It's not going to go easily. It's not going to go well. It hasn't been. And think about what you bring to the party. Think about what you can do physically, directly, and personally involving yourself on location there. Right after the event, the U.S. State Department warned Americans not to travel to Japan until April 1st. Well, guess what? It's after April 1st now. Get off your you-know-what and get there. They need your help. And think about what you can bring to the party, whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, someone who is just good with kids. You love animals? Even the ASPCA is involved with all the stray animals there that have been so displaced by this terrible event. Go to our website, comprehensive list there. I promise you, you will surprise yourself when you think of all the possible linkages there are for you to get involved. I have an email here from Patrick. He says, I got a question. Patrick's in Evanston, Georgia. I have a question about an international transfer via Paris going from the same terminal. Am I subject to security again? I would like to bring some wines. Well, the answer is, if you're talking about Charles de Gaulle, one of my most unfavored airports in the world, yes, you got to get outside and transfer with another bus and go to another terminal and go through security again. It's a nightmare. Every chance I get not to go to Charles de Gaulle, I go to Orly instead. Charles de Gaulle, to me, add 5 hours to your connect time. Because you got to get out of the terminal, go get a bus, and then go stand on another long line with people who pretend not to understand what you're saying. I never had a bad experience in Paris. Excuse me. I've never had a bad experience in Paris. I love the French. But the people who work at Charles de Gaulle, it's a different zip code. It's a different planet. And, you know, you go with God when you go to Charles de Gaulle. I'm sorry. It might look cute, might look fun. It's not. So the answer is don't bring wine until you're on your last flight and you buy it at duty-free. Otherwise, they'll take it from you. Now, there is a rumor, and it's a strong rumor, that the European Union might be changing the rules on liquids. And you know why they might be changing the rules? Because of all the concessionaires at the airport are so angry that they can't sell anything because they could take it. It gets taken away and people are smart enough not to buy it then. The bottom line about liquids, you know, we're so idiotic. I could probably, with all due respect to MacGyver, I could probably make a bomb based on what they served me with a breakfast omelet. So I don't have to bring a liquid on board. It's silly. I think it's a conspiracy of perfumeries and pharmacies to stop women from their moisturizers and to stop other people from it's just nuts. So hopefully the European Union will get wise. But that's like asking the TSA to get wise. I think they should take the European Union officials and the TSA, put them on one boat, set them out to sea with all the liquids, and see what happens. In any case, back to where we are in Salzburg. For those of you who have a sense of history, we all know that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was born here in 1756. And 6 years later, that's right, at the age of six, he was playing his first royal concert in Vienna. So there's a great tradition here. And one that we can follow. I mean, it's literally and most pleasantly in your face, if I can say that, from the minute you get off the airport, because the airport itself is named for him. Everywhere you go, anything you touch has a musical flair to it, and we'll be talking about that a bit later in the show. But I got to go back to one other item here that gets me angry, and that's this: there's not a plane today. Think about this: there's not a commercial plane today that can accommodate the carry-on bags that we're bringing on. And the reason for that is we're bringing on everything because we don't want to pay for people to check our bags. And so I was on a flight the other day from New York to Los Angeles on Delta, and it was a 757. The plane was full, and nobody wanted to spend $60 to check two bags. So they were trying to get on the plane with everything they could other than check it. And, you know, they called group one and group two and group three. By the time they got to group two, it was already a zoo on the plane. Every bin was full. And here's the interesting rub. They had agents from Delta in the jetway checking bags that they knew could no longer fit inside the cabin of the plane. And then you got people really angry because they're saying, wait a minute, you're checking the bags here and you're not charging me, but you were charging me at the bellhop, you know, at the skycap to check the bags? I could have saved $60 just by bringing the bags to the plane and then having you check it. It's a total scam, and they created it themselves in their pursuit of short-term profits. They're delaying flights, and how many bags did I check? I mean, did I count on that jetway, Delta having to check, which, by the way, delayed the departure of the flight? So I mean, it's a lose-lose situation. 53 passengers had to check their bags at the jetway, so that nobody was moving on the jetway because they had to manually tag bags on the jetway for a flight that was going for 5.5 hours to Los Angeles. It was a mess. And by the way, I talked to the gate agents. They tell me it happens on every single flight. And to make matters worse, that was a 757. This is an airline that's operating 737s on a lot of longer routes. Can you imagine what a zoo that is? It just gets worse and worse and worse. I think somebody has to take a command decision here and say, it's not how much it costs, it's how much it's worth, not just in terms of time and energy, but goodwill. And sooner or later, someone's going to vote with their wallet and say, you know what? I'm just going to dress up as a bag and put wheels on myself. I'm not certainly on the plane for the in-flight food, and just get on the plane. It's just getting that crazy. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about baggage fees and how to get around them, because you know what? The airlines this year globally will raise and generate over $20 billion in excess baggage fees. Ouch. Somebody's making money. Back with more from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Hamburg here, back right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. And a note about this hotel, not only is the hotel full of history, you need a GPS. You need a GPS in the hotel because, like so many older hotels, and this is what's part of its charm, it was one house built on another house, built on another house, and the next thing you know, you're going to get lost. But that's okay because then you meet people along the way. It's kind of fun. It's part of the charm of the hotel. You know, somebody says you go up the stairs. And you go, really? And then what do I do? Well, then you turn left. And then what do you do? Well, then you go up some more stairs. And then you go downstairs. And you go upstairs. It's great. It's sort of like, where's Waldo, but in Austria? It's kind of, but I like it. I actually do like it. It reminds me of another hotel in Ireland in Limerick called the Dunraven Arms, because it was another hotel that was built and then added on and added on and added on. And if somebody doesn't escort you to your room, you're going to be exercising because you don't know where you are. And then you think you know where you are when you leave your room, and then you find a whole other floor that you didn't even know existed. I like this. This is fun. Anyway, but that's all part of the history of the hotel, which we're going to talk about later. But first and foremost, I warned you about baggage fees. Now we're going to talk about them. On the line with us now, the editor for the Independent Traveler at independenttraveler.com, Sarah Schlichter. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
All right. I don't know if you heard my opening, but, you know, the other day I was on a Delta flight going from New York to L.A., and so many people didn't want to spend money for Delta to check their bags. They brought them to the gate. And these are all bags with wheels on them. And let's be honest, and I will be fair to the airlines in this respect. Just because your bag has wheels on it doesn't mean it's portable. It means
right.
It's transportable. But still, 53 separate bags had to be checked in the middle of the jetway. How about that?
That's amazing. And I've seen that happening on just about every flight I've been on recently, too. Maybe not 53, but on just about every time it's a full flight, and they say, you know, we can't fit everything, so would you be willing to gate check your bag? And, yeah, it really, you know, it delays departures, and it just makes things inconvenient for everyone.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? It's sort of a scam, because most smart travelers know if you can get your bag through the TSA security and just get it to the gate, even if the airline says they won't let you bring it on the plane, they'll check it and they won't charge you.
Right, exactly. And I know a lot of people who just plan on that, you know. And I always just carry on only, but I know I pack just in case I do have to gate check that bag and, you know, make sure all the important stuff is in my personal item. I mean, if the airlines are going to get obnoxious with us, we have to get sneaky with them, right?
Let's see, obnoxious versus sneaky. It's a great combination. All right, so here's my question. I mean, we know that if you want to check two bags on a round-trip flight on most airlines these days, with the exception possibly of Southwest,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be charged essentially about $120, $25 for the first bag, $35 for the second. That's $60 one way. That's $120 round-trip. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And, you know, if you know ahead of time that you're going to be checking one or two bags, it's really worth checking this, all the different airlines available to see which have the lower fees. If Southwest is available or even JetBlue, which will let you take that first bag for free. Sometimes, you know, maybe the major airline will have a slightly cheaper fare, but once you add in the baggage fees, it may not be your cheapest option. So I like to check TripAdvisor's flight search tool because they have a fee estimator, and so you can see, you know, all the different fees that might apply, not only baggage fees, but like in-flight fees, like snacks and services and that sort of thing, so that you can actually figure out what the heck you're going to pay in the end.
Well, here's the funny part of the story, and it's somewhat ironic, that now who's getting up in arms about all this? None other than our friends at the TSA. They're now saying they want more money from a passenger facility charge fee on your ticket to cover the additional people they have to hire at the checkpoints to look at your carry-on bags, because everybody's showing up with everything short of their dead grandmother in a trunk.
Yeah, that, you know, that makes sense. And I was reading that I don't think the airlines have to pay the same taxes on these baggage fees as they do on fares. So it's
worse than that. The General Accounting Office has figured this out, and there's now a move afoot to tax the airlines on these fees, because what are these fees if not a de facto airfare increase? That's what they really are.
Right,
and if they gave you a $120 airfare increase, they would be taxed at a much higher percentage by the government on that ticket than by
right.
charging you just that. And they figured it out. They've been raking it in based on the fact that they're not being taxed appropriately.
Yeah, it's smart. So, you know, you can't blame them for trying to make a buck, I guess. But it's, you know, the government is, if they're being denied taxes, they're going to try to step in and get a piece of that.
And, of course, the minute they do that, the government will then do that, and the airlines will then pass those taxes on to us. We'll pay even more.
Yeah, it's terrible.
All right, so here's the thing. There are some passengers who are more equal than others. You know, if you have an American Express card with Delta and you use that card to check in, then all of a sudden your bags go on the plane checked for free. Same thing, Continental has a program with Chase, with their Visa card. If you have that card, your bags go on for free. So you're paying an annual fee for the card, and not to mention the interest charges you're paying for the purchases on that card, but at least your bags don't get charged.
Right. So if, you know, you have to kind of do the math. If you fly often enough to make it worthwhile, you know, to if the baggage fees would be more than that annual fee, then it may be worthwhile for you. So it's worth checking into it, especially if you, or if you're an elite flyer on any of the major airlines, then in general you won't pay the baggage fees. So if you fly a lot, it's worth kind of building up your loyalty with one airline.
Let's talk about the fare comparison you did between American Airlines and Southwest Airlines on a flight from like New York to Las Vegas. I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the American Airlines flight, it's initially cheaper when we priced it out. But if you add the baggage fees, then suddenly the Southwest flight in total is cheaper. And it's really hard to see that on most booking sites because they don't always, you know, include all the fees in there. But you kind of have to whip out your calculator and look at the policies and make your own conclusions there.
And now, of course, if you really want to be a schlepper, and for those people who don't know what the word schlepper is, I can help you out. I can walk you through that. But if you want totally free bag charges, then take Amtrak.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how much you can bring on an Amtrak train. You can carry on.
Oh, wait. Wait. So you can bring your dead grandmother on the Amtrak train. You see, we solved the problem.
You can carry on two bags and then check three more bags for free. And I mean, can you imagine bringing that on a plane?
Well, so wait a second. But here's the untold story. You can bring two bags plus another three bags on the Amtrak train. Who's going to help you get on the train with those bags? I've never seen a porter at an Amtrak station since 1947.
Well, that's a good point. You may want to bring your flunky or your child or someone to help you, you know, load up. But if you can, you know, if you're traveling with a lot of stuff, this is good for maybe, you know, college students or something. If the train is an option, you've got a lot of stuff, you know, take that and spare yourself a lot of hassle.
Now, there's one other thing that you bring up in your work that I happen to think is essential. You know, when you go to the supermarket and you go to the butcher shop or you buy produce and they put it on a scale, those scales have to be inspected by the city to make sure they're giving you an accurate weight so they're not ripping you off at the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Who's inspecting the scales at the airport? I want to know who's out there. You know, that's their word against yours. So now a number of different luggage gear companies are selling portable scales that you can actually take with you. They just fit on the handle of your bag, and they tell you exactly what your bag weighs, so you know if you're overweight. Because the airlines, if they don't rip you off for the actual check-in fee, they're really going to kill you on the excess baggage fee.
Absolutely, yeah. I always recommend having that luggage scale. You know, use it at home, and there may be a slightly different calibration between your scale and the airport's, which there shouldn't be, but let's face it, sometimes there is. So if you're
We actually did an investigation when I was over at NBC where we did all the scales at the Phoenix airport, and they were completely inaccurate. Between 10 and 20 pounds more, and that's how they were raking in all the money. And we went out there with all of our electronic scales and proved the point, and they said, you know, there's a big investigation, and that lasted for 5 seconds. And I'm sure there are other airports that are just equally guilty.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, they say, I think they're supposed to inspect them on some sort of schedule, but, you know, does it happen? So if you bring your own scale, you can use it as proof, and then you can also, you know, when you maybe you've gone on a trip, you bought a bunch of souvenirs, and then before you fly home, test your suitcase again to make sure you're still within the limits. So that can really help you out.
Yeah. Or do what I do if you're flying domestically. I haven't checked a bag domestically in 8 years. I FedEx my bags.
Yeah.
And if I could FedEx myself, I would too, because I'm certainly not on the plane for the food. For about $20 more than the airline wants to charge you for losing your bags, guess what? Your bags go door-to-door, and you save 2 hours of your life, and you don't have to weigh it at all. Just do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great idea. And your point about, you know, paying money for your bag to be lost, that just happened to a colleague. Not lost, but his bag was practically destroyed when he got it back. I mean, it had gone through, you know, zipper hanging off and all that stuff.
Right.
They wouldn't give him his fee back.
And that brings up a very interesting lawsuit, because you paid for a service additionally to the airline ticket, and then they lost your bag. Why wouldn't you get your fee back? That's
exactly
an interesting story.
I know. I mean,
you know what?
Wasn't...
I'm waiting for the lawyers to go after that one. That's going to happen soon. You wait for that lawsuit, okay?
I hope so.
All right. Sarah Schlichter, the editor for Independent Traveler. Of course, you can read her at independenttraveler.com. When we come back, a look at Salzburg the old-fashioned way with the governor, who will be joining us right after these messages. Peter Greenberg here from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. Back with more right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this April weekend, coming to you from the historic Hotel Golden Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. And as you've heard, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Every time we can get a chance to ask the locals, we try to get somebody in who knows more than anybody else. And I couldn't think of anybody better as a local to welcome to the show the Honorable Governor of Salzburg, Mrs. Gabby Burksteller. Welcome to the show.
Oh, a warm welcome to you as well.
But you're not just the governor, you're also the state president, too. I mean, you're wearing two hats, aren't you?
Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it?
I like it. But I have an admission to make. Most of the people listening to the show, with the exception perhaps of the people who remember the movie The Sound of Music, don't really know where Salzburg is. They don't really know the history. They don't really know the culture. You know it all. You know most of it. So I guess the real question I have for you is, set a sense of place for me. Where are we? And what makes Salzburg, Salzburg?
Okay, so first of all, welcome to Salzburg. And in Salzburg, where is Salzburg? If you take a map of Europe and you just point to the center, you will find Salzburg there. And what's so special to Salzburg, I would say, first of all, the name says a lot about it, because salt means that the richness of our country has to do with salt, and salt was in former times much precious than it was gold.
So it was a very big commodity.
Yes, it was in the past, unfortunately, and that's why Salzburg is such a beautiful city with an incredible architecture, and it's really worth a trip to.
Well, we are right here in the center of the old city. I mean, you can't get better architecture than where we are right now.
Yeah, it's called the North of it's the Rome of the North.
But what's interesting about it is it's also very manageable. It's small.
Yeah, you're right. Salzburg only has 159,000 inhabitants, but I would say the whole world has place in it.
Now, as an elected politician, you know every one of them, don't you?
Oh, yes, of course.
Of course you do. But what makes it different, though? Because we've done the show from Vienna. We've done this show. We've gone up and down the Danube, which, by the way, I have to let everybody know is not blue, but we try. What makes it so special, though? Because, yes, it's manageable. Yes, it's a walking city, totally walking city.
Yes, but I think the special thing about Salzburg is that you have almost everything in a small place. Because in Salzburg, you meet culture and nature in such a wonderful way. Let me make you an example. If you go for breakfast in the morning, in one day, you go for breakfast in a typical coffee house, very traditional. Afterwards, you go skiing in the mountains. At midday, you have a light lunch with products from the region in the Alps. In the afternoon, you go back to the city, and in the evening, we have a wonderful concert or an opera in the festival halls, and then you go out for dinner in our gourmet restaurant. So you have everything in one place for one day.
And this is what the governor of Salzburg does. This is amazing. You have a great job.
Yeah, that is really amazing, and I would say for everybody in the world, we offer something. We offer sports, we offer culture, and I think everybody can do a good rest in our city.
But I do have a complaint. You know what my complaint is?
Yeah?
Everything here is Michelag.
Yes, well, it's not very healthy.
If you want to go on a diet, you don't come to Salzburg.
Well, you can You can have Salzburger Nockerl. This is without Schlag.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, you should try it.
Going schlagless? No, you okay.
Well, if you are here in Salzburg, in the Golden and Hirsch, you should really try Salzburger Nockerl. Nowhere else in the world you will have this.
Explain.
Yeah, it is a lot of eggs and air, so it's good for your health because there's so much air in it, and it looks like mountains, and it's soft on your tongue, and you won't regret to try it.
So basically, everything you've just explained to me is skiing, eating, followed by more eating, drinking, and more eating.
Well, but you have sports and eating in once, and culture, don't forget that.
Of course, and the music.
Yeah, and the music. And the music is something very famous Salzburg is for. I would say there's no household in the United States where you don't have music from Salzburg during the year. One of the most famous songs in the world, it's Silent Night, and it comes from Salzburg, actually. No, almost nobody knows about it, but it comes out from a little village near Salzburg.
And it's called Silent Night because after all that eating and drinking, you are sleeping.
Well, I would say at the time it was written, people were quite poor and they didn't have a lot to eat. But what they had is, yes, just a feeling for this beautiful country. So Silent Night you have in the States. And there's something else that's typical for Salzburg. It's Sound of Music. I guess everybody in the United States knows the song Edelweiss.
Yes. I'm not going to make you sing it. I won't do it.
You won't do it?
You want to sing it real fast?
Well, I don't know if I can it, but it sounds like Edelweiss, Edelweiss, and so on.
I think we know it. That's great. Well, you know, you're right. It's manageable. It's small. And you can go from restaurant to restaurant.
Yeah, you can.
You can. In the middle of skiing.
And you have the mountains in between, and you have the festival. And during the summer, we have this very famous festival, but we have a festival at Easter time. We have all year long.
And we have a festival called Commercial Break. But Governor, thank you so much for joining us. It was great. I love the
thank
idea
you.
That you sang for me.
Next time as well.
And now I have to go eat something and then sleep. We'll be back with more.
Bye-bye.
From Salzburg right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Goldenhurst in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here. Of course, you can always email me if you can't get through on the phones to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. You know, if you've been tracking the online travel agencies and their fights right now with the major airlines about whether or not they'll even let them display their fares on those agency sites, we're talking about everything from, you know, Expedia and hotels.com and Orbitz. The same thing is happening in the hotel business, and it happened a long time ago as well. When you think about some of the third-party sites like Expedia and Travelocity, when the hotels were in a big economic slump a couple of years ago when they'd overbuilt, they were happy to have these companies come in and say, listen, let us sell your unsold inventory because it's a very, you know, obviously a perishable commodity. An unsold hotel room is revenue you'll never recoup once the sun rises. And the hotel said, okay. And then before the hotels knew it, these agencies like Expedia were selling all their inventory at those discounted prices, and the hotels got angry and basically started kicking them out and wanted to take it back inside because they were, you know, as demand started intersecting capacity, the hotels were losing money because everything was being discounted. Well, we've seen it happen recently in the airline business with the big fight with Orbitz and American Airlines, and that's still going on. Well, now, here comes another website for hotels, which in concept sounds great. My question is, how long can it continue if the hotels start booking a lot more rooms? And joining me now, the co-founder and president of a website called GetARoom.com. I love that name, GetARoom.com. Bob Diener. Hey, Bob.
Well, it's great to be with you. You can't forget the name, right? Once you hear it, you remember it.
Right, so. but you heard my open, and I have to be devil's advocate here. If I'm a hotel and I'm only selling 50% of my rooms, then it's great for me to go to all the other OTAs and say, hey, here's some rooms you can sell at a discount because some revenue is better than no revenue. But if all of a sudden I'm up at the 75-80% occupancy level, and all of a sudden I'm like going, do I really need these guys? What am I doing? And next thing you know, one by one, they're going to start getting booted off. So I guess my devil's advocacy question, Bob, is how do you stay in business when that happens?
Well, that's a good question. The good news about the hotel industry is that there's so many hotels, and it's very, very competitive. You know, unlike the airlines, there's only a small number of airlines, there's a small number of car rental companies, but there's a lot of hotels, and it's very competitive. And even though occupancy rates may go up, they don't go up all the time, and not at every hotel. Some hotels cater to business travelers, some cater to leisure, some are busy on the weekend, some are busy midweek. So we created at GetARoom.com some new tools and new ways to get better deals that the hotels love and consumers love. See, the big issue with hotels is they want to put more heads in beds, but they don't want to lower their rate across the board, and so they don't want to publish lower rates. So we created a new system and a new way to book hotels that we call unpublished rates. Now, the way this works is hotels will typically give us 10 to 25% less than they put on their own website or they put on the other major websites. The deal we have with them is that we don't publish them. We publish the lowest online rate, and then we tell you, once you come to GetARoom.com, you look through the hotels, you pick the ones you want, it says call for lower rate.
So wait a second. Let me see if I get this straight. You're a website, but you have to make a phone call? We're going back to the future here.
Well, it sounds counterintuitive because people always think the lowest rates online, but we can actually get you. We have really good rates online, but we can get you even a better rate. Everybody wants a better deal. We can get you even a better deal, but you get it by picking up the phone. It just takes a couple minutes. The way it works is you call the number's on the site, but it's 1-800-HOTELS-8. You call that number. And you say, let's say you're going to New York and you have a certain hotel you want or a category hotel. You call and say, do you have an unpublished rate there? They'll say, yes, we have the unpublished rate. It's about 20 to 25% less. They don't tell you the exact rate. They tell you the approximate savings because they have to hide the exact rate. You know about what the rate's going to be. You know the lowest online rate, which you see online. You know it's going to be better. And just by spending a couple minutes, you can take a rate that's, you know, online maybe $100 and easily get $70 or $75 for that.
So basically saying this is like the Claude Rains character in Casablanca, shocked to finding out that gambling is going on at Rick's Casino but collecting his winnings from the night before.
Well, the difference is that hotels love this program because they don't have to give everybody a better rate. They're only going to give those travelers that are a little bit savvier that find out about it on your show or find out about it some other way, and not everybody's getting it. So they don't want to give everybody the deal, but they want to give some people the deal because not every room is filled.
So what happens is you pick up the phone, you call you guys, and you ask for a guy named Vern, and you give him the secret code. I'm only kidding. Bob Diener, the co-founder and president of GetARoom.com. Interesting website that actually forces you to make a phone call and talk to a human being. I like it. When we come back, more from the Hotel Goldenerhirsch in Salzburg, Austria.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Goldenerhirsch in Salzburg, Austria. You know, earlier in the program, we had the governor on the show, Ms. Gabby Burgstaller, who was talking about festivals in Salzburg, and there are a lot of them. And not surprisingly, given the history of this city, and joining me now, the president of the patrons of the Easter Festival, among other things and other festivals, Michael Berger Sandhofer. How are you, man?
Hi.
That was your answer? Hi.
How are you?
That's even better. We'll get there. How many festivals are there in Salzburg every year?
The main one is in summer, and then we have the Easter Festival since 67, and then we have the Mozartwoche. End of
the
January.
The Mozart what?
Mozart Week. Mozart Woche, we call it.
Help me out.
End
Good.
Of January. And then we also have a small one during Pontrecourt, Whitsun, just 3 days. Normally mid of May, beginning of June.
So basically the calendar is sprinkled with festivals.
Yes, absolutely.
What's the most important festival?
I would say the most important, the most famous is the Summer Festival, founded in 1920. And has always been a very international festival, drawing crowds from all over the world and also having among the artists all great international conductors, singers, directors who have been coming here for a long time. And the Easter Festival was founded by Herbert von Karajan in 67. As I said, it's a very special one also, but the concept is different.
Which means?
Which means that the most famous German orchestra, the Berlin Philharmonic, are exclusively performing here in Salzburg Opera. This year, for instance, we have glamorous American soprano Emily McGee singing Salome, the most famous German orchestra, Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by one of the most charismatic conductors, Simon Rattle, from England, here in Salzburg, Austria. And this you don't get anywhere else.
Now, I have to tell you, many years ago, I was talked into going to the Opera Ball in Vienna. And what an amazing experience, right? Talk about music. I mean, first of all, I had to go get dressed up. I came on the carriage. I was white tie and tail. I felt I was the only person there not a count or a countess. The only one there not wearing a sash, you know. And I walk into the opera house in Vienna, which, of course, is completely redone for this particular ball. And they start off with, and I'm like, oh, isn't this interesting? And they have all the debutantes coming out dancing the minuet. And isn't that lovely and quiet? And then all hell breaks loose. And they're dancing and crazy all night long. Nothing but every different floor, different music. There's jazz and they're right. And it's amazing.
It's true. And they have copied it. They have tried to copy it all over on Earth. And never forget, this it's the only day when the Viennese State Opera makes money.
Is that true?
That is true. Opera needs to be funded in Austria heavily by the government. In America, it's a bit different, but in America, the government also gives money because through tax deductions, the companies can more or less pay government pays the same like here. But in Vienna, it's the only time they make
in Vienna
profit.
What about in Salzburg?
Salzburg, we don't have an opera ball in Salzburg.
No, but do you make money at the festivals?
We do make, but we could never live without the support of the government. But, you know, we draw so many visitors every year, so the money is coming in. And actually, the city, the county, and the state, through taxes, make quite a lot of money out of it. But we need to be subsidized by the government as well.
So basically, it's like baggage fees with music.
Baggage fees and music. Yeah, if you put it this way, yes.
I just thought I'd put it
but
in here's so you can understand. Yeah.
Yeah, here's no surprise, because you know what you get, and you know the amount you have to pay. And there's no surprises in the evening when you get in that you have to pay for anything.
How close? I mean, when people say we're having a festival, you know, and somebody's listening to the show say, hey, let's go to Salzburg this summer for the festival, can they come? Can they get up close and personal? Or are they in the seats so far back they need a telescope?
No, that is not true. You know, time has changed. We are surrounded by festivals, major festivals all over. Every year there's another one coming up somewhere. It's no problem to come also spontaneously. And actually, even for the most attractive performances, you can always have the chance to get a ticket last minute.
And for people who want to book way in advance, see, for me, I come from, even though people don't want to come in January because they think it's too cold, that's when you have Mozart Week.
It's a lovely festival, but the very special one is in spring. It's the Easter Festival because it's the most lovely time in Salzburg. And it's not as crowded as in summer.
Well, but, yeah, but nobody's showing me in January for the Mozart Week either.
Oh, they are. They are. Maybe less Americans, but coming people mostly listening to Mozart and the classic repertoire.
I want to go places where there are less Americans. Listen to me on this
then
one.
Don't
trust
come
me.
To Salzburg.
No. What I mean is,
but we love
if I can come to a festival where there are not 85 escapees from Cleveland and I can actually see myself immersing in the culture, wouldn't I want to be here in January for the Mozart Festival?
Exactly, but maybe you can start to bring more Americans at the Mozart Woche, Mozart Week.
Well, obviously, after this show, of course, they'll show up because they won't think that anybody else will be here. I love it. What's the biggest surprise, very quickly, that people find when they come to Salzburg that they're not expecting to see?
They probably think to see a very old opera house itself. When they go to Italy, they see these most historic places like Teatro San Carlo in Napoli or Teatro alla Scala in Milano. Here we do not have really an old opera house because the two main ones performances are taking place. One is built in 1960 and the other one was just reopened a few years ago. So maybe that's a big surprise for some. I have heard it from Americans because they think we will have that we'll see here is historic opera.
All right, Michael Berger-Sandhofer, who tells you to come where the Americans aren't coming. No, okay. Thank you again, man. That means we're out of town for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your week. And for those stations smart enough to stick around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here from Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this second weekend in April. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you are. And we, of course, have been living on airplanes. What a big surprise. Traveling back and forth. In fact, get out your maps, boys and girls. We're at 47 degrees, 48 minutes north, 13 degrees, 2 minutes east. We're in Salzburg, Austria, coming to you from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. And as you know, we will then solve it right here on the air. And as you also know, we travel to a different location around the world every weekend. But you can also sign up for our free newsletter, and it's really free. It's just updated daily because travel is news, and as we all know in the last 6 months, it is front page news, and it's delivered straight to your email inbox. We have the top travel news stories of the day and all, of course, my tips to help you navigate the mess known as the travel process. Just go to petergreenberg.com for more information, and you can sign up to get it every day for free. It's not a transactional website. It's an informational website. So get on board. We'll actually save you some time. We might even save you some stress. Speaking of stress, a couple of items in the news I want to talk about. Wouldn't you know it, it comes under the category of now they tell us. The TSA is announcing somewhat reluctantly that they're going to now test those new scanning machines for radiation. Well, duh. Haven't we been talking about this since they instituted the machines when they said there's no radiation danger? Any oncologist will tell you that radiation is a cumulative situation. I mean, it's not, you know, just one dose. It's accumulation of doses. And that's what. Why do you think the pilot union went nuts and basically said, we're not going to do it? Because pilots have had to go through those machines like 5 and 6 times a day in some cases. Then the flight attendant unions got angry. So what did the TSA do? They cut them a pass. They cut them a deal. They told them they didn't have to go through it. But we have to go through it. Wait a minute, what about frequent flyers like me? I don't want to turn into a nightlight and glow in the dark. So, watch this space as the TSA tests for radiation. And then, of course, it gets into a definition of terms because you know it's going to come back saying, well, you get more doses from going to your dentist or going to the movies than this. Well, you know what? Everything is relative. I want a second, a third, and a fourth opinion on this. The other thing that needs no second, third, or fourth opinion is the FAA's continued reluctance to do the right thing when it comes to children under the age of 2. And let me explain this. There is overwhelming historical evidence that, let me just back up. Any airline will let you, as a parent, take your child under the age of 2, and you don't have to buy a seat for that child. You can hold that child in your lap. That is being an irresponsible, suicidal parent. Why? Because in the event of a hard takeoff or hard landing, the G-forces are so strong that you physically cannot maintain the grasp on your child. And as a result, your child becomes a missile, and you know the answer that happens then. Injury and death. We've had instance after instance where we've had survivable incidents or survivable crashes where kids were seriously injured or killed because they didn't have their own child restraint seat or they weren't properly strapped in because the parents wanted to save money by not buying them the seat. Now, here's the weird part of the story. Anytime there's an accident, the National Transportation Safety Board investigates, and they're supposed to make safety recommendations based on their investigation. This is a no-brainer. They've been making this recommendation now for over 25 years, and the FAA has ignored it. And in fact, the NTSB has made it an urgent safety recommendation that any child under the age of 2 needs to have his or her own restraint seat in a separate seat. And they do it by weight, because they really did their research with baby crash test dummies, and they figured out that any kid under the age of 40 pounds needs a rear-facing seat. Any kid between 40 and 60 pounds needs a front-facing seat, and any kid over that needs their own seat. It's a no-brainer. So what did the FAA do? They said, oh, now we want to study it. There was nothing to study. The NTSB had already done it. So now they study it, and a year and a half later they go, well, wait a minute. We're confronted with the same exact findings that the NTSB had. We already know it's a bad deal, but now we get into something called economic benefit or economic impact. And every time the FAA is confronted with a choice between an obvious safety benefit or an economic impact, they choose the economic impact and defend the airlines. The airlines are being looked at by the FAA still as their customers, as opposed to us, the citizens, being operated on in a responsible way. So what does the FAA do? They issue the following press statement, and they do it every year, and they've done it again this year. And they say the following. We've looked at the results from the NTSB. Incontrovertible evidence makes sense. We did our own study. Incontrovertible evidence makes sense. However, we will not – now, I want you to listen to this logic and tell me who's on crack, okay? They say, we are not going to require the airlines to provide these seats for passengers or to make the parents buy a separate seat, because if we did – airfares would go up, and people who would otherwise fly would drive in cars and be killed in automobile accidents. Now, I ask you, they're not known as the Federal Highway Commission. They're known as the Federal Aviation Administration. When I want the FAA to talk about highway safety, I'll ask them. This is about aviation safety, and they're just hiding behind that to make sure that the airlines don't get hit with a charge. You know what? If you're a parent listening to this show and you think you're going to get away with it by taking your kid on the plane and holding that kid in your lap, you are basically an irresponsible parent. That's all I can say. With or without the FAA's stupid logic, because there is no logic to that, you need to basically take that stroller seat, which, by the way, if you look on the back of it, you'll see if it's FAA approved and if it fits in the seat next to you, and strap your kid in. And there are some airlines, American Airlines being one of them, that will give you a 50% off fare on the lowest fare that you paid if you do that for your kid, if there's a seat available. You need to do this. Waiting for the FAA here is like waiting for Godot. It ain't going to happen because they're basically in the hip pocket of the airlines on this one, and they should be ashamed of themselves. It's incontrovertible evidence. You can't argue with this. And yet the FAA goes around it by saying we're worried about highway safety? I mean, come on. It makes no sense. It's insulting to us as passengers. And by the way, it's not really benefiting our kids now, is it? So listen to me. There are a number of different products on the market. You can find out about them by going to our website that you can buy. I'm not involved in promoting any of them. I just want you to know that they're available to you, whether they're stroller seats or little child harnesses that you can get based on the weight of your child. You need to do this. There's overwhelming evidence. Listen to me. Overwhelming evidence that if you don't and there's a hard landing or an aborted takeoff, your kid could be at risk. If you think that you can just sit there and put your arms around that child and hold that child safely on the plane, you cannot. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that now. I'm done with my diatribe, but it angers me that every year this issue comes up, and every year the FAA comes up with the same pathetic argument, which does not hold water in reality, and they should be ashamed of themselves. I guess there goes my interview with the FAA administrator. All right, it happens. When we come back, another good friend of ours will join us, a regular on our show, Mike Boyd, the president of the Boyd Group out in Colorado. He has a few things to say about airline delays, and he actually thinks they'll be a thing of the future. I sure hope he's right. We'll be back with more from the Hotel Golden Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Strap yourselves in. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hotel Goldenerhirsch in Salzburg Orchestra. I just said Salzburg Orchestra, but you know what? I kind of like that. Salzburg is an orchestra. We'll take your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. And as we do always at the segment every week, I encourage you to go to our website, which has the most imaginative name in the world, petergreenberg.com, to get the comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Japan where they need the help the most. And my hat is off to all the people in the travel industry who stepped up to the plate almost within 24 hours to create ways for you to donate money, to donate time, effort, energy, resources across the board. Airlines have done it. Hotels have done it. Everybody from Starwood to American Airlines to United Airlines, and of course the traditional organizations like the Red Cross, the ASPCA, and so many others, they're all listed on our website. And please consult that, because there are ways for you to get involved that go beyond just texting money on your phone, which, by the way, they'll take, and they'll take gladly, and all that is needed as well. So please check out our website. One of the guests that comes on our show all the time, usually with bad news, and we usually dump on everybody, and by the way, with good reason, may have some good news for us today. Regular on our show, Mike Boyd from the Boyd Group in Colorado. Mike, tell me the truth. Are you trying to tell me that delays may be a thing of the future?
I think so. I mean, we have this. I spoke yesterday at the. We spoke a couple of years ago at the NBTA, National Business Travel Association, and I said, you know, this next gen program the FAA has to fix our air traffic control system, it just fell another 4 years behind.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, but we support that. I said, you support a delay? But I'm afraid there's not much coming along to fix that, so we're going to have to adjust our air transportation system to the air traffic control system.
Okay, so walk me through that. What does that mean?
It means we're going to have, you know, a system that we're going to have to probably cancel flights when we have weather like we're doing today. Any natural growth is going to have to be tamped down because we can't put more airplanes in the sky because the system just can't handle it. And like I said, I've worked on this since 1994. There's been very, very little progress made. So, you know, unless the FAA decides to, you know, get its act together, we're going to have more delays in the future, not less.
Well, you're asking the FAA to do something it's never done.
Right, something intelligent, yes, indeed, sir. You know, but again, the reality is, airlines and organizations like, you know, GBTA, you know, they shouldn't be asking Congress to fund this. They should just be asking Congress to make sure the FAA gives them a system they need. That's a fundamental difference.
Well, let's do some history work here, Mike, and you know as well as I do, the FAA has been funded with certain systems like this before, and they never implemented them. There are boxes of equipment gone unopened.
Oh, absolutely. I have an article on my desk here from 1993 where the FAA comes out and says, we're going to have the air traffic control system fixed by 2001 at the latest. It'll be fixed. You know, that was the advanced automation system, $5 billion, and it's gone.
All right. Now, for those people who are not electronically advanced, as I am, but at least I understand the concept a little bit, when you're dealing with late-generation airplanes, like the 777, even now the A380, and the new ones coming online, like the 787, couldn't you even argue the point that they've got better avionics systems on those planes than the air traffic controllers are using on the ground?
Oh, absolutely. Air traffic controllers are using, you know, outdated stuff. God bless them. They're fine people, but they just don't have the tools to work with. And there's no question. The problem is the FAA is trying to increase the number of airways in the sky with this new program. What you need to do is just use all the sky. You don't need airways. And we have that equipment in airplanes. We don't have it on the ground.
Now, every week, there's another press release that comes across my desk about next gen. I happen to think the words next gen are a joke because we're like, how many gens away from that?
Well, it's I call it yesterday gen because all they did was take a bunch of programs they've never been able to really come across the line with, package it together, reschedule it, call it next gen, and say it's on time. I mean, it really is a fraud. And unfortunately, the airline industry is quite happy with it. You'd think if you're losing $10 billion in extra costs, they'd be raising hell. They're not doing anything except banging on the doors of Congress saying, we support you.
All right, so we're not talking. Let's go from air traffic delays in the air to tarmac delays on the ground. We all know about the rule that went into effect last April, the tarmac delay rule. It basically said that if the plane is delayed out there on the tarmac and it doesn't return to the gate within that three-hour mark, that each airline could be subject to a fine of up to $27,500 per passenger. And if you took a loaded 737, you're about $4.2 million there. So the good news, at least on paper, is that we haven't had very many tarmac delays now, have we?
No, because an airline says, I'm going to launch the airplane to New York. Whoa, there might be bad weather there. I might have to divert to Hartford or to Newburgh, where there will be 20 other airplanes diverted, and there may not be a gate where I can put people, get people off. And as a result of that, I'll just cancel the flight. I can't take a risk on breaking the law, which they'd be doing, and getting a $4 million fine. So if consumers think that 4% of the flights canceled in January is high, it'll probably go higher. Anytime there's bad weather, airlines aren't going to take a chance. The problem is we have a Secretary of Transportation who didn't think it through before he put that rule in.
So you don't think it's a good rule?
No, it's a horrible rule because it assumes that airlines do it intentionally, and it assumes that when it happens, there is always an option to get someone off of an airplane. That's not always the case. So airlines can't take a risk on a $4 million fine, and they'll just cancel, when otherwise they might not.
See, I have a whole different philosophy about this, Mike, and bear with me on this, and that is, I'd like to start it off by saying, I don't need your stinking jetway. I just need portable stairs. And once you get to that point and you can get over that mindset that every airplane needs a jetway, we'd stop a lot of the delays and all the extra fuel burn and people just waiting for a jetway. I mean, how many times have we been on a plane, and I know this has happened to you as many times as it's happened to me, where you actually know from the point you take off from the ground that you're going to be landing early. It happens. And they all know it. There are no surprises there because
right.
They transmit this on an ACARS that goes right to their operations center and also to the arriving airport saying, hey, Mike Boyd's flight 505 is going to be landing 27 minutes early. There are no surprises. It's not like you just showed up at the airport and they're, oh, my God, he's here. They knew about it 4 hours earlier.
Right.
So when you land at the airport, why can't you just go to a penalty box, roll up some portable stairs, and get everybody off the plane?
If you have the stairs, and I agree with that. We have a weather situation where you might have literally 20 airplanes divert to Hartford, or when Denver's all-weather airport gets shut down due to weather and they go to Colorado Springs, you're not going to have stairs, and you may not have enough people on the ground to even monitor the people. So it may not be possible to safely get them off, even with stairs, because you have 20 airplanes. You don't have 20 sets of stairs.
Right, although I'm not even talking – yeah, but, Mike, I'm not even talking weather. I'm talking just everyday stuff when there
Absolutely.
Is no weather.
Well, absolutely, and there's an issue there. If you know you're – like, I just came in from New York into Denver. It was 50 minutes early. To the consumer, that doesn't mean anything. But if you slow the airplane down and get there on time, save a little gas, the consumer will still be happy. So it's managing that. You know, getting in, like you say, 15 minutes early or 20 minutes early or 30 minutes early, or ahead of schedule, I should say, and then sitting there burning gas waiting for a jetway, nobody benefits from that. You're quite right.
And every airline CEO who have asked the question about going back to the future and just getting portable stairs, can you give me one reason, weather not related, right? We're talking good weather days, that you wouldn't do that, and they can't give me an answer.
Well, sir, you see, most of our airports have not been built for that, and many of them don't have stairways that would accommodate it. And then we have baggage, and we can go on and on with that. I mean, there isn't a really good answer. You're right.
See, now, I would like to come up with an idea for a whole new marketing campaign for an airline that deals with guys like you and me who, when the plane lands, you just want to leave the plane. And the new campaign would be, we not only get you there, by the way, every sexual pun intended, we not only get you there, we get you off.
Yeah, exactly right. I think you've flown more than I have, and I've flown a lot. But when was the last time you really thought an airline really cared about you more than they cared about the stupid rules? And I work with airlines, but it is true. The rules take priority over the customer, and that's just not right.
And that's why I laugh when Delta Airlines announces they're sending 11,000 of their ground personnel to charm school. What does that mean? They're going to tell us with a smile that they're not going to do anything for us? They're going to say
like,
please and thank you when they tell us no?
Well, yeah, we used to do a lot of airline training. For some Delta's commuter carriers even. But you can't just do one day. That doesn't do a thing. You got to change the environment they're in. But what they're doing, they're sending them to charm school so they can say no better, not so they can say yes. You never make money saying no to a customer. Somebody has got to tell the airlines this. You might not make money saying yes, but I guarantee, keep saying no, you'll never make money. But that charm school is just, here's how you can say no to the customer a little bit nicer. That's stupid.
Well, my philosophy is never take a no from somebody who's not empowered to give you a yes in the first place. I deal that with a telephone company. I deal that with Sears, and I got to deal that with the airlines. Mike Boyd from the Boyd Group, always a bearer of good news, I think. Mike, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. We'll be back with more from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, where I think yes is the answer to everything.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from Salzburg, Austria, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the cuisine here in Austria, and of course, my original encounter with Austrian cuisine, everything was mit Schlag. Everything, right?
Right.
I know.
Just the sweet things, you know.
Just the sweet things, and my next guest knows a little bit about that. Talk about a hot restaurant. Talk about a hot chef. And I hope you'll allow me to give you this description of you, and you can dispute it if you can, or if you'd like to. He's known in certain circles as the Wolfgang Puck of Salzburg. Are you angry at me now? Are you mad at me?
No. It's okay.
You're laughing now.
I'm very proud about that.
Okay. Well, his name is Sepp Schellhorn, and he actually operates a restaurant, which is a very cool restaurant in a very cool location called M32. You're right at the top of the Museum of Modern Art.
That's right. It's located at the Museum of Modern Art in one of those three hills located in the city of Salzburg at the Mönchsberg, and it's called the street name M32.
And you wasted hours hiring consultants to come up with that name, didn't you?
Yeah. What a long time.
You looked out the window and said, oh, there's the name.
Yeah.
Something like that. But let's talk about Austrian cuisine because, you know, if you go to Amsterdam and you want to talk about Dutch cuisine, people look at you like, what's Dutch cuisine? They don't even think they have it, but you do.
Well, in Austria we have a history about the 18th century, but the Bohemian influence for the sweets and that you are eating with a lot of whipped cream, as you call it, Schlag.
No, as you call it. What are you talking
well,
about?
You asked me about the Schlag. and we have a lot of influence also from the south, from Italy. But the Austrians are eating a lot of liver and all those pig fries, we call it. And we have...
So let's start for a second. It doesn't sound like the healthiest diet. Come on.
No, it's not the healthiest diet. But the most thing is that the guests or the tourists that are coming to us, they'd like to have organic food, you know. And this is our country. This is our landscape. And we'd like to sell all those things which one are produced in our country.
So, you know, we talk, it's sort of like this, it sounds like this new wave called, you know, farm-to-table cuisine.
Yeah.
It's been farm to table in Austria since day one.
That's true, but you know, we can't produce as much as we are producing in the kitchen for our guests. So the most thing is that we are producing a lot of pasta and a lot of those things, but with the influence of organic food and with the influence of our history.
When you think about the food that you're doing, right, and how you source the food, right? What's the when you try to construct a menu?
Yeah.
and you have a cutting-edge menu, so let's talk about that. What's the one thing you put – I always ask this of chefs, and what's the one thing you put on your menu that you thought, wow, this will be popular, and nobody ordered it? Or the one thing you put on the menu saying, who's going to order this, and you can't get enough of it because everybody wants it?
Well, when I'm creating a menu, or I'm starting with the sweet dishes. All the time.
So you're already dangerous.
Yes.
You're already dangerous.
Mostly, the people are coming to us or to my restaurant up there is for all the stuff that I told you, for the liver and the kidney and all those things.
Okay, wait. Liver, just don't say liver and kidney. Liver cooked how?
Liver, it's just a liver. One type is Austrian style fried, a fried liver with potato salad, or the other one is a roasted liver with balsamico and a lot of cognac in there.
Well, you know what? With enough cognac, I'll eat liver.
Really?
Hey, with enough cognac, I'll eat cardboard.
But it's not your liver, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. All right, but I'm saying, but in terms of the produce, in terms of the other meat that you do, it's how much of it is locally produced?
Well, I would say about 70%. Around there. Well, it's not so easy to have fresh vegetables in wintertime, honestly. But when the spring is coming till the fall, it's always produced. We will always buy products around Salzburg and the region.
But you didn't answer my question. What's the one thing you put on your menu you thought nobody would order, but they did?
Well, that's I can't explain it in there's a one German word. It's called Beuschel. It's the lung and the heart of wheel, and mostly they're coming to us for this one because we are in a in one of those restaurants guides, and they're coming specially to eat this.
The lung and the heart of the veal.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No, it's true.
And let me. And it tastes just like chicken, doesn't it?
No. It tastes like. Like a fish. Like a mixed fish, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Get some extra cognac ready. I'm coming in.
You will have. Yeah, you have to come tomorrow.
Unbelievable. That's great. Unreal. Lung in the heart. And it's described in the menu as what?
It's thin sliced.
I always have my lungs thin sliced. Yeah. You know that. Yeah. I will only eat it that way.
It's thin sliced and roasted and served with whipped cream.
Oh, now you're really pushing.
No, it's true.
Are you serious?
Yeah, with a lot of white wine and whipped cream in there.
Ah, see, here we go with the white wine and the cognac. Okay, I got the concept. Yeah. Unbelievable. Sepp Schellhorn, the chef of M32. And, in fact, I think you're on the cover now of Heart and Lung a Veal magazine. Yeah. I think we'll put you on the cover.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. When we come back.
Magazine.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, let's add that, too. When we come back, more from the
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, recovering from heart, lung, and veal. But Peter Greenberg is here with you from the from Salzburg, Austria. I got to try that dish. He almost had me when he said, and it's served with cream. That was it. I'm done. Anyway, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And we've got lots of emails. Let's go right to Casey in Fort Lauderdale, who asks, my husband and I have tickets to fly to Tokyo. Obviously, with the terrible disaster, we are postponing the trip for now. You always speak of the best times to go after things like this happen. In light of that, in your opinion, when do you think we should consider heading to Tokyo? Well, if I always talk about it, why wouldn't you go now? That's the whole point. Tokyo did not get hard hit at all. In fact, the building shook. They had some minor disruptions in their transportation system there. Remember, their subway system carries a whopping 8 million passengers a day. They're back on service. There were some rolling blackouts. They're going to get that under control. And so if you're just going to Tokyo and you're not going to northeastern Japan, I would go. This is the time to go. But what I would also do right now, you have an opportunity here to do some good. Go to our website, petergreenberg.com. We have a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing that essential hard work there. I can guarantee you, Casey, that there's something there. that you can get involved with while you're there that will give you memories of a lifetime more than you ever could have hoped for, because whatever you're giving back, you're getting back. And so please do that, okay? Here's one from Barbara in Seattle. My girlfriends and I want to take a trip to Hawaii in late May or early June. We have never been and want to spend about 5 days there. We have no idea which island is best. We are not big beach people, but love history stuff. What would you recommend? Well, first of all, you've given me much too much of a general idea of what you want to do and not too much about specifically what you want to do. Most people who go to Hawaii for the first time go to Honolulu. It's the most commercial of the cities on the island of Oahu. And that's what they do. But you didn't tell me, you know, for only 5 days, you really can't do two islands. You'll be killing yourselves. I wouldn't go to Honolulu my first time out, but then again, most people do. I mean, if you want some history, obviously you've got Pearl Harbor there, you've got the crater, you've got Diamond Head, you've got the North Shore where you can watch suicidal people surf, because that's where they surf if they're suicidal. I tried it once, and I'm barely alive because of it. I'm a big fan of the Big Island, of course, because of all the volcanic activity there. I love Kauai. But you're not a beach person, and if you love beaches, you're gonna love Kauai because you have the whole Nepali coast. What I want you to do, Barbara, when you hear this show, email me a more specific list, because getting five people to agree about anything is difficult, and you're going with five people. Find out exactly what they don't want to do, what you do want to do, what you think your level of physical ability is, because that really is going to make the difference between what I'm going to tell you to do. Because if you go to Oahu, I would tell you to go to Dillingham Field, which is an abandoned Nike missile base where they actually have great glider rides, and you can go soaring in the updrafts there over the island. It's phenomenal. And on the weekends, they have something there that most tourists never see because they don't even know about it. They play polo in the middle of the island, and it's great. Or you go to the North Shore to a place called the Sea View Inn if you like fish, and you get great ahi at a place where all the locals know about it, and you'll never see another tourist there. However, you know, you told me you don't like to go to the beach, so I haven't sent you to one beach. Do you like to hike? Do you like to bike? Get back to me, and I will help you out, okay, Barbara? Here's one from Greg in Baton Rouge. Since the dollar-to-euro exchange rate continues to suck, yes, it does, can you recommend some good travel buys in France? No, I can't. You set it already up. The dollar-to-euro rate sucks. But remember, there are no great economic buys at a time like this unless you want to book hotels with the idea that you only spend enough time in the hotel to shower and sleep. You know, for most of us, we're not entertaining in our hotel room. We're not, you know, doing great ballrooms there. We're just there to shower and sleep. It's like a cruise ship. You pick a hotel then for a location, for its surrounding the culture and history, and then you get out of the hotel and walk around the city. Well, the same thing applies to Paris. I'll give you one suggestion that you might think is silly. Check out Best Western hotels. Because in the United States, the connotation of a Best Western hotel is really bad shag carpets, cinder block walls, and beds that sag, and TVs that give off doses of radiation. Overseas, Best Western has an amazing array of hotels, ranging from castles and chateaus, and they've got three or four in Paris that are really cool and really affordable and really close to the metro. So check that out. You'll save at least a little bit of money, and I hope that that you understand that. But look, you don't go because of the dollar exchange rate. You go because you want to have a great experience, and you don't delay it because it's only going to get worse. I hope you you understand that. All right? And, Barbara, you get back to me. Five Women Alone in Hawaii. Now, there's a series. All right, we'll be back with more from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Back with more right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Salzburg, Austria at the Hotel Goldener Hirsch, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. I always like to get guests on that I can call Ask the Locals. And my next guest, you can't get more local than this guy. What a history he has. Not only is he a journalist and a TV moderator, but he has a history himself. For those people old enough to admit growing up to a movie called The Sound of Music, he has a little bit of history there, too, because he was actually the assistant director on that music, on that movie. So he's all things Von Trapp, I think.
Sort of Von Trapped.
Von Trapped. You're trapped by Von Trapped.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his name, of course, is Georg Steinitz. How are you, sir?
Fine. Thank you.
As someone who really lives and breathes Salzburg, what's the one thing about this city that will surprise people who have not been here before that they're either trying to expect and don't see or don't expect and will see?
Well, I think it's the overall impression you get if you look at the city. It's this huge mountain chain in the back and this very old city that really looks like cut out of paper, just constructed for a movie.
But they've shot a lot of movies here.
Yeah,
for that very reason.
Right. There's a reason for it.
It's already built.
Yeah.
They got the set built.
That's exactly it.
Now, let's talk about The Sound of Music, because, I mean, I remember growing up to that, right? Julie Andrews singing. I won't make you sing. I already made the governor sing. I'm not going to make you sing. Okay? She sang Edelweiss, you know.
I'd ruin your microphone if I tried to.
But, I mean, that is sort of like a legacy for this city, isn't it?
Well, you know, the population here did hardly take part in the project. Of course, there were a lot of taxi drivers, extras involved, but the first run of the film here in Salzburg lasted for exactly 3 days. Then all those people had seen the film, that was it.
That's it, done. Right, but the movie wasn't made for the people of Salzburg. The movie made for the people of the world.
Yeah, yeah. But people sometimes are a little bit upset if they ask citizens of Salzburg, did you see the Sound of Music? But I would say 50% say, no, I've never seen it.
That's like asking people in Paris, did you see Gigi, you know?
Probably, yeah.
But here's the thing. It did put Salzburg to a certain extent on the map.
Absolutely. They say that about 70% of the tourists coming to Salzburg come because of The Sound of Music. And
does that mean they walk out of town and start dancing in the fields?
No.
Is there a lot of dancing and singing in the fields? You can help me out here. No,
they're well behaved. But you really have a feeling that something has done to the city and to the people through that film. If you see the dinner show here where they perform Sound of Music songs and so on, and you see Chinese tourists getting up and singing Edelweiss with a drop of tea in their eyes, you really have a feeling that there's something happening to them.
Are you trying to tell me there's Sound of Music karaoke going on here?
Not that bad, no.
Not that bad. But forgetting going to a dinner show, can you actually walk where the movie was shot? Can you go see it?
You can see a lot of places, yes. There are a lot of locations that probably bring back memories. Although they were in the film, they were very short, cut into the songs. But there are some scenes like when Maria first comes down from the mountain where you have a little bit more time and leisure to look at the places.
When people come to Salzburg, are they sort of disappointed that they're not reliving the movie?
No, not really. But they do ask you about the background, and I'm always very careful going into details.
Really? Why?
Well, you don't want to spoil Christmas stories.
Oh, lots of infighting during the movie?
No, not at all. But it's just, well, you know, somebody wrote a book about his life, and that was turned into a film, and that film was turned into a musical, and again it was changed over to another movie. And it's a beautiful film, no doubt about that. But it has very little to do, or relatively little to do, with what really happened.
So you're destroying the myth right now.
No, I'm trying.
Yes, you are.
I'm trying to stop right here.
Too late now. The cat's out of the bag. When people come here, other than that, because there's so much more to Salzburg than that movie, but maybe it's what brought them here, right? What do you show them? Okay, what would you take a first-time visitor to see?
Well, first-time visitor, of course, the old city. Then I would persuade them to take a walk across the one of the hills from the fortress up north, and of course visit Mirabel Garden. And if we have a little more time, maybe in the afternoon we go out to Hellbrunn and see the water plays there. And then it always depends, you know. Usually some tourists come here on under the condition, if it's Wednesday it is Salzburg and Thursday is Brussels. If you have
I got one day in Salzburg. Tell me the one place that you would go that's not in the brochure. That where you like to hang out?
No, I think you have to do sort of this duty program. The old city, the fortress, a little bit of a walk through the Mirabeer Garden, and maybe if there's still some time left, Heilbronn.
And you forgot one more thing. You got to sing Edelweiss at least once.
You don't have to. It's no. You will not be forced to do that.
Okay, I'll take you at your word. Georg Steinitz, right here in Salzburg. Thanks very much. I appreciate that. And when we come back, that music means we are out of time for this hour. But for those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations smart enough to stick around, we got a whole other hour coming from the Hotel Goldenerhirsch here in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Ain't a wise day. Okay, I'm stopping. Okay, we'll be back.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this April weekend. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes back and forth, but we love doing that. We always live for the mixed nuts and the bad omelets, but forgetting all that, it also gets us where we need to go. And where we are right now, 47 degrees, 48 minutes north, 13 degrees, 2 minutes east. We're coming to you from Salzburg, Austria, and the Hotel Goldenerhirsch, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. And speaking of petergreenberg.com, that's a free newsletter. We believe that travel is news, and of course, there's no argument anymore that travel is front page news, and that's what we do. We update it every 12 hours. Just go to petergreenberg.com, sign up for it. You'll get it every 18 hours delivered into your email inbox. We are not selling anything. We're not transactional. We are, here's a news bulletin, informational, and we need that to get from point A to point B without being abused, or at least to be abused less, because at the end of the day, we want that experience, and that's what we're all about. Speaking of experiences, we'll be talking a little bit later in the show. You know what's coming up in about 20 days? Yes, that's right. The royal wedding, William and Kate. Are you bored already? You know, you got to hand it to the Brits. They do two things great, weddings and funerals. And they're getting ready for the big one here. Those of us who are old enough to remember the one in 81 with Prince Charles and Diana will be glued to our set because, you see, the fact that Americans are still hung up on royalty and the British royalty means that we've never really gotten over the fact that we're probably still a colony. But nobody wants to admit that. And we'll be talking to Jennifer Collin from the New York Times a little bit later about that, about preparing for that. But speaking of preparing about that, guess what else went on sale this week? No, not tickets to the wedding. You're not going to get one of those invitations, but tickets to the Olympics in London in 2012. And for those people who know the way that this game works, it's almost like a lottery. Well, it really is a lottery, in which you can sign up for events that you think you can get tickets for, and then you'll find out sooner or later that you can get tickets for midnight ice hockey or curling, and that's the Winter Olympics. But, you know, the stuff that you don't really want to see. What you really want to see is gymnastics, and you want to see track and field. And there's a way to get around that and get those tickets. But first of all, yes, you want to go to the lottery, and if you go to our website, we'll let you know how you do that and how you register, and obviously you want to do that sooner rather than later. But there's another way to get tickets to the Olympics. It's no different than how you're going to get tickets to the Super Bowl or tickets to a big sporting event or an annual event, and it's very simply this. Who controls those tickets? Well, people who are Olympic organizing committees from different countries, and sponsors. Inevitably, the sponsors will control blocks of tickets that at the end of the day, they only need three quarters of the ones that they got. But they went out and they just got greedy and they got all these other tickets. So what you need to do is to find out who the Olympic sponsors are, then call their corporate headquarters numbers and find out who is in control of that ticket block. Now, that ticket block is not just a block of tickets, it's also a block of hotel rooms. So that if you call those hotels in the city, they'll always tell you they're full. Well, there's a great deal of difference between a booked room and a blocked room, and any hotelier will tell you that. But no hotelier wants to give up the block because they've already been guaranteed those room nights. So you find out who's controlling those room blocks, just like you're finding out who's controlling those ticket blocks. Get to know them. It's just a phone call. Get on their list so that all of a sudden, 7 days before an event, when they realize they don't have that many people within their corporation that need to go to see, you know, the marathon or the decathlon, all of a sudden you get that and you get in line to buy that because they want to get rid of that ticket too or the hotel room. That's the way you do it. Now, let's shift gears for a second because now we get to my favorite topic, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, and that's the frequent flyer programs. The Wall Street Journal did a piece recently. I just had to laugh. I mean, they've upped the ante now. The airlines will do anything they possibly can to encourage you to redeem your miles for anything other than an airline ticket because they don't want to get rid of revenue passengers, so they don't want to displace revenue traffic with a free ticket that they, by the way, induced you to get when they got you to join the program. So now, and you've heard me talk about this before, and I'm sure that if you're a frequent flyer member of any airline program, you've already received the solicitation to get a magazine subscription with your frequent flyer miles. Let's do the math on that. 4,000 miles of a redemption for a subscription to the Reader's Digest. I mean, I will personally come to your house and slap you if you do that. Let's do the math. 54% of all mileage earned is earned on the ground with credit cards, so you get, you know, 1 mile per dollar spent. So if you take that 54% and analyze that to the 4,000-mile redemption for a Reader's Digest subscription, you've just spent $2,400 for that magazine for a year. Are you enjoying every page of that magazine? You better. But it gets worse. Another airline, Delta, is offering you for like 6,500 miles. I love this one, but it's about to get better. I'm building for this, guys. They're offering you, for 6,500 miles, a box of Godiva chocolates. Now, we found out that the thing retails for $40. We actually went out and bought the chocolates. Now, what's in that box? 18 pieces of chocolate. Now, for that amount of mileage, you've spent $4,000 for a $40 box of chocolates. Now, let's divide 18 into $4,000. Are you enjoying those bonbons now? But it's now about to get worse. The airlines have now upped the ante, and I'm not making this up. I will give you for those people who might even be dementedly interested in this, I will share this with you. For about 83,000 miles, one airline, and it's not in the U.S., it's actually Finnair. Ready? Plastic surgery. I mean, who did they hire? Some guy off the street? You know, I mean, they're going to give you breast augmentation for 83,000 miles. Wow. For 85,000 miles, I want to watch. I mean, oh, my God. Can you believe this? It's getting out of control. And if you do the math on that, good luck. You just overspent for an operation for a guy you don't even know. I mean, it's probably a guy named Vern in the background. You know, I'm sorry. It's getting out of control. I am waiting for the lawsuits, ladies and gentlemen, that will sue the airlines for running what essentially amounts to be an illegal, unregulated lottery with their frequent flyer programs. It goes against the spirit and the letter of the inducement that they gave you to join the program in the first place. And this may be the year. I think the plastic surgery is what took me over the top. This may be the year when those lawsuits get filed. There'll be a lot of angry lawyers unable to redeem their miles, and I don't know a lot of very high-paid lawyers who want to spend 83,000 miles for plastic surgery. They just want to go to Rio without the plastic surgery, I think. I hope. Wow, it's just getting crazy. Anyway, when we come back, yes, we are coming back after that. We're going to be talking about Prince William's upcoming wedding and alternate ways to enjoy the big day, assuming you even want to go there. And I promise you, under no circumstances will I buy a commemorative plate or a snow globe. We'll be back from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg, Austria, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, I'm still trying to come down from 83,000 miles in plastic surgery, but we're coming to you from the Goldener Hirsch Hotel in Salzburg, Austria. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, we'll go to Rio and get a tummy tuck. No, if you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And speaking of that website, I want to remind you again, go to that website, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Japan. They need your money, and even more importantly, as time goes on, they will need your physical presence and your help. This is a volunteer vacation tailor-made for anyone out there because there are so many different things you can bring to the party and help people in need. So check out that list. I think you may be pleasantly surprised, not only in the short term, but for the rest of your life once you take that trip. We were talking earlier about the crazy stuff with frequent flyer miles and, of course, Americans' obsession with royalty, not the least of which involves the British royal family. I happen to think the British royal family is the most dysfunctional royal family next to the Monaco royal family. I think both of those two families are so dysfunctional they become entertaining. But once every so often, in this case maybe once every 30 years, we get hung up in the fairy tale, and the fairy tale becomes the wedding. And joining us now, she's a regular contributor to the New York Times who knows everything about the wedding and what you need to do to enjoy the big day as long as you're not getting married to Harry or to William, Jennifer Conlon. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, it's going to be one big party in London and all throughout England, I'm afraid to tell you.
Well, I know they've already declared it a bank holiday, that the 29th of April, right?
Yes, but the pubs are allowed to stay open on that Friday and Saturday night, the 29th and 30th, until 1 a.m. There's going to be street parties. There are going to be live television screens up in all of the big parks, I believe. And I think you're going to see just London going wild.
How does London go wild? Walk me through that.
Well, you know, it is funny because they love what they call fancy dress, which is, you know, costumes. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw people running around in morning coats, the men anyway, women in huge hats, the occasional, probably in England, the man in the wedding dress, just to be funny, because they have that tradition of men dressing up, you know, Shakespearean like women. And I think, you know, they love to have their pints of beer in the middle of the day, and in this case, probably earlier. And I just think you're going to see a lot of really funny behavior and people having a great time.
So given the choice, and I'm going to ask you the same question I would ask of myself, given the choice of watching that on TV or going to London, which would you do?
Well, I used to live in London, so I have a lot of friends there, and I know the London spirit. And even the people who don't care for the royal family, the non-royalists, if you will, I know are going to be out having a good time because some of my friends who are not particularly into the royal family are staying because they just know it's a national event. It's a moment that you can celebrate, even if not that couple, England in general. And they don't want to miss the party. It's going to be a big party.
All right, so we got the concept of the big party. Now it's what about the big ticket price?
Yes. Now, it is an opportunity for hotels to try to get people in. And even though they're offering
By the way, we have a terminology for that. It's called gouging.
Well, the problem with London is for Americans, it always feels like gouging because it's a pretty pricey city when you do all the conversions from the English pound to the U.S. dollar. So when they're offering deals, it doesn't always quite feel like a deal to us. But they are offering deals. They're trying to get people in to hotels for, you know, £200 a night as opposed to £300, which is a good deal in England, in London, and they're offering specials if you want to go have tea at some of the nicer hotels, and they're having wedding teas with giving little wedding gifts. There's all sorts of, you know, things going on. But the cheapest way you could do it, and I just saw this, is they are starting to offer camping in some of the sort of parks throughout London, and they'll set up tea tents, and you can camp for three nights for £75 in Clapham Common, which is South London.
Yeah, Clapham Common, that's where the trains derail all the time.
It is, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's Clapham Junction, I know.
But it's very pretty in Clapham Common, and they're going to have a beautiful, they're calling it Camp Royale.
Oh, please. I can think, you know, that sounds like a bad Woodstock nightmare to me.
I think it's going to be fun. I think you have an attitude problem. I think it's going to be, and, you know, Americans are more into it in many ways than the Brits.
Why?
I think we just have this fascination with this fairy tale, as you said earlier, with this royalty, because we don't have our own royalty. And the idea that you can go and be in London, or even if you do end up watching it on TV, see this procession from, you know, Westminster Abbey to Buckingham Palace, and these coaches they're going to use that are, you know, dating back hundreds of years. I think we like that. I think we like that kind of princess-prince moment.
Sure, it's sort of like a bad Disney movie. But let me ask you this, though. We have a situation where most Americans, if we're honest, are going to end up drunk in a pub 60 miles away, having a vague recollection that someone got married.
And, you know, and they'll remember that. You always remember, in some ways, the vacations that go horribly wrong. They'll remember that on their wedding day, they got drunk in a pub and lost their way.
Yes, and nobody found them for 3 days. Hey, speaking of getting to the pub, I mean, airfares are going to be pretty expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, British Airways is offering a deal that includes hotel. And when I last checked, you know, you could kind of, for $1,000 a person, fly out Thursday the 27th of April, come back May 1st, and have that, you know, airfare from JFK to London, Heathrow, and three nights in a hotel. So that's not bad when you consider normal airfares at this time of year about $800. So
that's true.
You know.
And I think they throw in breakfast on that deal.
They are. You can have breakfast at some of them. And they have a different levels of hotel if you go to their royal wedding package. So you can pick a nicer hotel and spend more, and or a cheaper one. But I think
right, different levels, right.
Was about
you have right, you have the royal package or you're camping in Clapham.
Camping in Clapham could be a really good time. Don't knock it.
Oh, my God. All right. Now, I was just in London 2 weeks ago, and everywhere you go, I mean, you cannot walk 20 feet without seeing a commemorative plate, towels, placemats, silverware. I mean, this is just an opportunity for blatant merchandising.
It's true. I mean, I heard that Kate and William said they didn't want their image on any tea towels because that was just too tacky. But I'm pretty sure that would, you know, is a rule that's probably been broken. But you cannot believe what sorts of things you're finding. I mean, I think, if I'm allowed to say this, I think they're even selling, like, condoms that have their pictures on it.
Yes, they are. I saw them. I did.
So there's everything. You can buy everything.
Well, I want to see the condom package they're offering at British Airways.
The happy
wow.
couple.
Well, no, yeah, I got it. You get drunk in a pub. You wake up with a woman you don't even know the next morning, but you, but William was there with you, you see? No?
Yes, exactly. And there's a and there's also a place you can go and link your arm. It's a gallery that has a wax figure of William, and it's in Mayfair. And you can go and stand next to him. He's life-size. Put your arm through his arm and slip your finger through an engagement ring just like Kate's, which is, of course, Diana's old ring, and have your photos snapped, as the British would say. And there you are. You're with William, your own engagement photo.
Yeah, whatever you do on that shot, don't take out the condom, okay? Please.
I think it's going to be a really fun time, and you have an attitude problem.
Are you going?
I might be. I'm not going to, you know, give that away because you might make fun of me.
why wait? No, listen, you know, I'm supposed to be there for the wedding because CBS is going to be there, and I'm trying to do everything I can not to go.
Well, you know, I found this these two women down in New Orleans who are going, and they have already bought wedding gowns that they're going to wear, I think, around St. James Park. They've made reservations for a rehearsal dinner at the Wolseley. They have organized the entire thing as if they were brides, even though they're both married and have children and live in New Orleans.
Right, and while they're gone, their husbands are getting out restraining orders against them.
They'll probably be getting up secretly at 3 a.m. to watch it live on television.
You know what's going
to
happen? I you know what those women are going to do? I predict this. Yes, they're going to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning singing, "I feel pretty, oh, so pretty." Okay, I'm done. All right, Jennifer Conlon.
Great time.
I know, and I think you're I actually think you're going.
I'm not saying. It's, you know, my little secret.
Okay. Jennifer Conlon, we read her all the time in the New York Times. Everything you ever wanted to know about having a great day on the big day, drunk in a pub next to your campsite 60 miles away. But other than that, you're going to have a great time. When we come back, right back to Salzburg, Austria. Why? Because we have a great time here with a different way to see the city, a lot of history, and yes, you might even hear Edelweiss. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch in Salzburg. Back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming from Salzburg, Austria, and the Hotel Goldener Hirsch, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, for this particular segment, you can sing. Because we're about to take a really musical journey through the history of Salzburg. And speaking of that, I'm feeling very old right now when you consider that the movie The Sound of Music was done in 1964. That's 47 years ago. I think I'm going to check into assisted living right now. Unbelievable. But we all remember it. It's one of those moments in our lives. You know where you were. You saw it. And chances are, like many of the iconic movies, you've seen it more than once. But if you really want to see it the way it was done in the real-life locations, then you've got to come to Salzburg and see my next guest, Stefan Herzl, who's the owner of Panorama Tours, because you actually do a true Sound of Music tour.
We're doing daily the original Sound of Music tour, 9:30 and 2 o'clock.
Right, and which one is the more musical? I'm kidding, no. But the bottom line is you actually go to the locations where it was filmed.
Yes. The Sound of Music gives you a good idea of the city of Salzburg, and the surroundings, the Salzkammergut, and the locations where the famous movie was made.
Sure, so you have the castles?
Yes.
Which castle?
We go to the Castle Leopoldskron, which was used as the house, and we also go to the castle outside of Salzburg, Fromburg, and we go to the gazebo where the romantic scene was filmed, year 16 going on to 17.
I won't make you sing it, but here's my question. Do you find a lot of parents bringing their kids and trying who have never seen the movie?
Not too many.
They all have seen the movie.
They all have seen the movie, and we had people on the tour seeing the movie over 50 times.
Wow. So they'll be going to the royal wedding, too.
That's right.
Oh, that, you see, when you've seen the movie over 50 times, I mean, that speaks to me like an intervention is needed. You know, but that's another story. But anyway, I'm going to ask you now as a local here, not as a tour operator, but as somebody who lives here, right? Where do you like to hang out that's not in the brochure? Where do you like to eat that's not in the brochure? Where do you like to go yourself that's not in the brochure? That has nothing to do with the Sound of Music.
You know, people love, if they come to Salzburg, we take them to the beer gardens. That's one of the most beautiful beer gardens, is the Augustiner Brewery. Still produce the beer by the monks. And it's a beautiful garden in summer with chestnut trees. Or there's another beautiful restaurant a little outside of Salzburg, called Auerhahn.
And what do they serve there that's, that gets you to go there?
Good Austrian food, but also international food, fish, and whatever you
want. Yeah, but what do you eat there? What do you order there?
I order Wiener Schnitzel.
I knew that was coming. Okay.
And Topfenknödel.
What was that again?
Topfenknödel.
Explain that, please.
This is very hard to explain.
I got all day. Let's go.
It's a sort of a green cheese dumpling and with whipped cream.
No. Mit Schlag?
Mit Schlag.
I'm shocked. You know, God forbid there ever comes a day in Austria where there's a dairy shortage. You guys won't know what to do. Right? No butter, no cream, no... It would be over. You'd be taking hostages. You would not.
But we still have beer. You know, Salzburg is famous for beer. And you can survive with a good Stiegelbier.
A good what kind of beer?
Stiegelbier.
Explain.
Stiegelbier is the oldest brewery in Salzburg. Dates back to 1491.
Not made by monks, though.
Not.
No.
It's still a family-owned brewery. And there's an interesting place to see do is a brewery museum.
And is there a great Chinese restaurant here?
We have Chinese restaurants.
I said, is there a great Chinese restaurant here?
I prefer to go to China or to the U.S.
Okay, you know why? Because the best Italian food I had was in Lucerne, and the best Indian food I've had was in London. So what's the best food that's not Austrian that you can have in Salzburg?
We have a good Italian pasta place.
There we go. Okay. Oh, and wait a minute. There's cream involved.
No.
Sure, they make all the pasta with cream. What are you talking about?
No, they use olive oil.
Yes.
And sometimes a little butter, but not too much.
Sometimes a little. See, you had to. Of course they do the butter. You're so busted. You know they do. Right? So you order the pasta and the Wiener Schnitzel and the beer.
Correct.
You do the tours twice a day. What's the biggest surprise that comes to people when they take the tour that they're not expecting?
The biggest surprise for most of, especially talking about women, talking about the wedding in London, is if they walk in direction Altari at the wedding church in Monsey.
Why?
And yeah, for most women, it's the most emotional moment on the tour.
Because?
Because they wanted to be the Baroness.
Oh, they're fantasizing.
Yeah.
Ah. So really, this tour really speaks of the continuing the fantasy that the movie had.
Yeah.
Right?
And we give you also a lot of information about the real family.
Well, you're still close to the family.
Yeah, I'm very close to the family, and I go nearly every year to see Maria around her birthday.
Now, she must be in her 90s.
Late 90s, turning 97.
Wow.
And she still plays accordion when I come and show up.
Really? Now, that's the tour I want to take, okay? We got a deal?
Got a deal. Here.
I'll come
next
with
time.
You. Okay. I'll sing, she'll play the accordion.
Yeah, maybe we do one of your broadcasting up at the Trap Lodge.
Oh, I like
that. Which is a wonderful property.
Okay, I'll show up with the microphone, you show up with the schlag.
Okay.
You got it. Stefan Herzl, of course, Panorama Tours, the way the movie was shot and the way you actually get to relive those scenes. Back with more from Peter Greenberg Worldwide in Salzburg, Austria, right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Golden Hirsch Hotel in Salzburg, Austria, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. My next guest has been on the show before. Fascinating book, fascinating life. It's one of those there but for the grace of God go I stories. Imagine a guy who's been a meteorologist, a sugar maker, a peanut sheller. He's been a child counselor. He's been an ambassador of tourism. He's been a horseman, a pit crew worker, a cook, a coal miner, a furniture builder. And that was just last week. Actually, he did a book called 50 Jobs in 50 States, One Man's Journey of Discovery Across America. He's either a fugitive from justice or he was an author with a good idea. I will pick the latter. His name is Daniel Sadecki. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, I mean, amazing stuff here. I mean, how did you come up with the idea? Were you just, like, lonely one day and got out the Yellow Pages? I mean, how did you decide to do this?
Actually, I was a struggling college grad. I couldn't find my foot in the door to any company, and I was wondering where am I going to fit in this workforce workforce of America. And I was like, there's got to be opportunities outside of my bubble, which was California, and I was looking for anything relevant to economics. And then I was like, let's go explore America through its jobs and what really shapes this country.
So basically, you decided to become a professional drifter.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you can say that. But, you know, it actually really helped me understand my country working alongside of, you know, fellow Americans. And also it was a personal journey of turning rejection into opportunity, you know, because I felt like, where were they in this great country? And, you know, I wasn't going to wait for them to come to me, so I went out and explored and created my own opportunity.
You know, I remember when I was in college and I was about to graduate, and everybody was in the same boat I was. We didn't know if we were going to get a job. So half the kids said, well, I'll just go to graduate school, because they didn't want to get out into the real world. They just wanted to stay in the cocoon of the university. You've actually basically decided to audit a lot of courses, right? You just basically said, I'm never going to let school interfere with my education. I'm just going to get in the car and just, you know, head somewhere until somebody says, hey, try this.
Exactly. I mean, the real life situation is definitely different than the what you learn in the classroom or a textbook. And I just had to, you know, stop floundering in my personal life and really, you know, make something happen.
How long did it take you to do 50 jobs in 50 states?
I mean, I did it in 50 consecutive weeks. So every Monday I would start a new job. And
whoa.
I was cold calling and emailing, and I was just setting them up as I was going.
Okay, I got to ask a stupid question. When you got every time you got a job, did you tell your employer, I'm only going to be here for 5 days?
Yeah, 5 to 7 days. And what's interesting, which I never expected, is that a lot of them said you can, you know, we're willing to hire you full time at the end of the week. So I guess, you know, it's also showing that employers should be open minded, because here I am getting rejected so many times after college in my own chosen field, and now I'm trying different jobs that I didn't have exposure to previously, and they're offering me a full-time job going in with no experience.
All right, so here's my stupid question. Was there one job, or maybe there were more than one job, but was there at least one job that you tried that you said, wow, that's the one I want to love. That's the one I was not going to leave town for. I want that job.
Yeah, actually, that was a dietitian in Mississippi. I was just so...
Well, hold it. You got your work cut out for you if you're being a dietitian in Mississippi.
No, that's why I chose it.
I mean, the average weight of people in Mississippi is like extra wide.
Yeah, 30% of the state's classified as obese, and it's just a different culture than where, you know, California to Mississippi is very different. And living in a food desert of the Mississippi Delta was really eye-opening, where people have to drive 100-something miles to go to a grocery store or a regular restaurant that's not fast food or fried. So,
you know, I always said that the best job for me in tourism would become, you know, minister of tourism to, like, Iraq. Because if only one person went, my numbers just went up 100%. So if you're a dietitian in Mississippi, that's about the same thing.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, yeah.
So after all this is said and done, you did your 50 jobs, you did 50 states. Why aren't you back in Mississippi now working as a dietitian?
Actually, that's something I'm really considering. But, you know, the book just released Monday, and, you know, going around talking about it and sharing my stories and what I've learned and what other people can take away from it first before I move on to my next journey. But, yeah, I'm also even considering doing a college semester program where kids get exposure to different jobs, and so it'll help them choose a major, because 80%
it's all come full circle. You're going back to school. I love it. Daniel Siddiqui, the author of 50 Jobs in 50 States, One Man's Journey of Discovery Across America. And if you're listening to this show in Mississippi, he might be coming back. We'll be back with more from the Hotel Goldener Hirsch. We're just talking about dietitian in Mississippi, and we're Mitch Logging again in Austria. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837. or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Golden Hirsch Hotel in Salzburg, Austria. Peter Greenberg here with you, taking your calls and answering your emails. Let's go right to them because we got a lot. One from Alan in Boise, Idaho. Searching for our next vacation, I've noticed that many hotels are now adding resort fees. Why don't you do a segment about these on the early show? Well, Alan, I do all the time. It's called Nickel and Diming and Getting Ripped Off. I'm appalled, he says, I'm appalled that these hotels do this just so they can advertise a lower rate. When we called the hotel, they explained the fee was for the amenities at the site, yet in their brochure they say these are complimentary. What do you think about this? Well, you know what I think about this. Hotels need to be competitive on value, not rate. And any hotel that wants to be competitive on rate and the nickels and dimes me, that is a declaration of war. And it applies to everything in that hotel. We all go shopping. We're all consumers. I know how much a bottle of water costs. Don't put it on my credenza and tell me it's $7. That is a declaration of war. Don't tell me that that I spent $400 a night for the room, but if I want a towel at the beach, it's another $20 a night. That's not an amenity. That should be all-inclusive in the cost of the hotel. And if you want to charge me that, build it into the room rate. Don't nickel and dime me. In the pursuit of short-term revenue, hotel revenue managers are engendering nothing more than long-term ill will. And I'll give you an example of this, Alan. There's a hotel in London called the Athenaeum, and I've stayed there for many, many years. They wanted to raise their room rates, and hotels should raise their room rates when they can. They're in business to make money. But all their revenue managers told them, oh, no, you can't raise your room rates because you won't be competitive on rate, and other hotels will undercut you. And they said, wait a second, what's the biggest negative touch point of our guests? And you know what it was? The minibar. They hated it because every time, I have a feeling that if you look at the Snickers bar long enough, you're going to eat it. You are. And everybody knows it doesn't cost $9. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going for that Snickers bar. So what did the hotel do? And by the way, that hotel had the old Darth Vader mini bars, the ones where it was infrared that you walk up to step away from the Diet Coke. Oh, my God. So what did they do? They removed the mini bars. They got rid of them, put in just regular refrigerators, and stocked those refrigerators completely full with every soda, fruit juice, Diet Coke, water, milk, cookies, candies, I mean everything, jammed full. They raised their room rates $30 a night, and their occupancy went up 17%. Now, let's deconstruct what's in that refrigerator. You would have had to have been a barricaded suspect for 24 straight hours in that room to consume everything that was in that refrigerator. But the nice notion was, you could if you wanted to, and you came home knowing there was something in there that you would actually eat and not have to go to your wallet to do it, and you didn't pay, and you didn't mind paying more for the room. Occupancy went up, revenue went up, everybody was happier. There's a moral to that story. Here's another one. There's a hotel in the Turks and Caicos, one of the Aman resorts. They're already getting $1,100 a night for the room, but they wanted to raise the room rates another $100, and they got smart. And hotels everywhere, by the way, even including this one, I might add, would be very well advised to follow their lead. What did they do? They made a deal with a phone company, in this case Skype. And by the way, they're a resort hotel in the Turks and Caicos. Nobody's going to be using their phones a lot, but people like to know they can if they want to. And, of course, every call from that room before they made this deal was going to cost you $48,000 anyway because you're in the middle of the ocean. So they made a deal with Skype. And as you walk, and they didn't put it in the brochure, they didn't put it in their rate card, they didn't announce it, but as you walk to your room, whoever was walking you to your room when you first checked in said, oh, by the way, while you're here, we just want to let you know that every phone call you want to make during your entire stay, anywhere in the world, as many times as you want, is free. Wow, thanks. Well, they raised their room rates, I think, $200 a night, and nobody blinked. Then they went back and did a survey of how many times the phone was used during the time that people were there. Now, at that particular hotel, people are there for only three reasons: fine dining, relaxation, and sex. They're not working their phones, okay? So they went back and they actually did a survey of how many times the phones were used. Three times. The first call was made back home saying, we're here. The second call was made during the middle of the stay saying, had the kids been arrested? Great, we're still here. And the third phone call was, we're coming home. Total cost of the hotel and phone charges on Skype, less than $2. And not a person complained about paying more for the rate. However, if they wanted to be competitive on rate and charge $8 a second for the phone, even those three phone calls, those people would have remembered that in the most negative way and never would have come back to the hotel again. There is a lesson there to all revenue managers at hotels and all asset managers who need to be taken out for re-education, probably to Siberia, to explain to them it's not about short-term revenue, It's about long-term ill will. So the answer to your question, Alan, is you bet I've done stories on this. I was checking into a hotel once where they sent me a bill the morning I was checking out, charging me $10. It was on my bill, mandatory tip to bellman. I didn't use a bellman. And I got the bellman on the phone and said, what is this? He said, I know. I said, wait a minute, do you even get the money? No. Well, we took care of that. I held that bill up on the air, and that ended that at that hotel. And they couldn't understand why I would do that. Because everybody else was angry, except I had the forum to put that hotel bill up on the air and say, this is wrong. I was charged $10 at a Hyatt hotel in Houston for the delivery of a Federal Express envelope, for which I already tipped the bellman $5. You know what? I held that up on the air. This is wrong. Stop it. We're not stupid. We shop. We're comparison shoppers, and we know better. How about that? And by the way, speaking of comparison shopping, I'm really happy I'm in Austria, especially in Salzburg. Lots of people to thank for the show today. Of course, we've got Mike Worrell, our chief engineer, who drew the short straw. He got stuck by coming to Austria. Wayne Taylor doing the boards in New York. Margaret Emery producing locally for us here. Shelley Goncharowski, our chief producer in Seattle. And, of course, Gerald Krishek, who he and I go back years, and the entire staff of the Golden Hirsch Hotel. Thank you guys very much. We'll see you next week, everybody, from another remote location somewhere around the world.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.